Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. With these podcasts, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Very impressive, very impressive. Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to the next step. Podcast about life and love, about spirituality. Well, it's about all things. We look at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. This podcast is being brought to you as part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and by the cool folks at epostle.net. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. Hey, if you're ready, let's take the next step. Still impressed how you got that piano in and out of here so quickly. Yes, welcome aboard. If this is your first step with us, taking baby steps, if you're taking some large steps, sprinting, jogging, if you are running with us, it's great to have you with us because it is a hot one. It is a scorcher today. Beautiful day, but it is a scorcher. It is 90 degrees here in Southern California. Can you believe that? March 31st, 90 degrees. What is that? That's 32 degrees for you Celsius folk. And, okay, yeah, thank you, Ken. Nice penguin imitation. For you Kelvin folk, what would that be? Let's see, 305 degrees for you, for those of you counting on the Kelvin scale. I don't know, is there anybody? Okay, except for the penguins. We are on five continents. We've figured out we've got five continents that write to us regularly. Antarctica is one of the holdouts. Who's the other one? I have to go back to that, but Antarctica, definitely no one's writing to us from over there. Anyway, it is great to have you with us today. It is a hot day over here, some hot topics too to discuss with you. This happens to be March 31st, Cesar Chavez Day. I wanted to kick it off with a talk about that because, you know, lately there has been a lot of talk about end times, especially when you hear about these earthquakes, tsunamis, and of course with the core meltdown over in Japan and nuclear radiation. We've been talking about that fear factor that has been coming out at us, probably on a higher wave than the radiation that's been coming out of Japan. And just a lot of people who've been asking about, well, this is the sign of the times. More than asking, it's not like they're asking what's going on. It's more like telling us. Like, I get a lot of comments, people coming up and saying, you see, it's the end of the times. You know, there's all these wars going on. There's Libya happening right now. It was Egypt a couple months ago, and we know what's going on in Syria, and we see it, and these are the signs of the times. This is the expression, and this is very, very, very dangerous. I want to talk about that coming up in, right after our song. I want to talk a little bit about that, also connect it with what Cesar Chavez had to say about, well, I'm going to give you this quote. I think it's a beautiful way to start off today. It says, we cannot seek achievement for ourselves and forget about progress and prosperity for our community. Our ambitions must be broad enough to include the aspirations and needs of others, for their sakes and for our own. Think about that for a few moments as we get into that whole idea of what's going on with end time. Of course, we've got Advent Sunday coming up in about a week. We're going to be talking about this in quite some detail in the weeks to come. But today, I gotta talk about it. It's like so pressing. People talking about it. Anyway, that's coming up in a few minutes. Today also, we went to a conference on war and peace. We've got some ideas about that. Of course, Ani's here with her bubbles. And we're gonna be taking some more steps in the Lenten journey as well. I hope you've been following it. A lot of comments been heard about the Lenten journey, and I appreciate all of them. I appreciate receiving your feedback on the Lenten journey. Yes, that was created last year. That was during the Lenten season last year. And those dates that you see on each of those podcasts, there are 49 of them, by the way. They begin on the first day of Lent on Monday, and they continue through to Easter Sunday, and exactly 40 days of Lent, and then the 9 days of Holy Week, beginning with Lazarus Saturday and ending with Easter Sunday. So it was a piece of work that had been sitting there for a year, and we resurrected it, and it's come up. It's, what are we talking about? Go to epostle.net, press on the Lenten Journey button, and you'll find podcasts for every day of Lent, and it'll take you all the way through to Easter. And it's just been, well, like I said, I'm very humbled. I'm very excited to know that these messages are getting out to such a wide audience. Thank you very much for all of your comments. And I want to welcome all of those people that are joining us from Brazil. It's got a nice message from Arshavir in Brazil, who's been following along and kind of tuned us into a few other people who've been sending us and blogging, and it's just exciting. And in the last portion of today's podcast, we'll talk about what's going on in Darfur and, of course, our fast for Darfur. We've got Gabriel, who is over there right now in the refugee camps, probably as we're speaking, probably wrapping it up and heading back. And got a lot of exciting things to share with you about that. So a lot of things coming together. I have been a little negligent for the last week, and I said that we would learn a word a week. And I think last week was the only one that we really passed up. I know in the past I've messed up, and we've made two for one. So today, how about if I give you three, okay? Here's the sentence that is an expression in Armenian circles. It said, Shad kanats kicha manats. It means, shad means a lot, much, has gone. Kich means little, and a little has remained. Shad kanats kicha manats. Here's the two words, okay? Shad means many, much. Kich means a little, quantity-wise, okay? Very little. A small amount. Okay? Now, the big word that I want to teach you is really not a big word at all. Remember, I taught the first one we kicked it off with was Chagarutyun. Chagarutyun. It means peace. Isn't that interesting? Like, you know, like, look how simple peace is. Peace, pox. It's so easy to say. Why do we complicate it with Chagarutyun? It's like not even a ch, it's a ch. Anyway, Chagarutyun, maybe it's so difficult to say because we realized somewhere along the way that it was so difficult to attain. That's another story. But today's word that I want to share with you is Li. It's in the quantity dimension, okay? We said Shad, much. Kich, little. Small portion, okay? Li. Li means full. Li. And that is a really cool word to learn because it's not really used too often in too many circles. It comes from the classical language. Li means full. It means plenty. It means full, basically. Okay, so in contemporary Armenian, we would say likene. It would mean that it is filled to capacity. It is complete. For instance, a stadium might be likajovur. There is tons of people, many people, okay? But the word li itself means full. And I think it's beautiful because you can use it, for instance, in terms of the moon, the full moon. Lia lucin, full moon. Li, it could be used, I've heard it in the names. We've got a young girl who comes to our church. Her name is Serli. Ser, of course, is love. Serli would be full of love. So there's a small one, an easy one that you can learn today. It is li. It means full of. It means complete, much. And it is in proportion to the capacity, to the quantity. It is in reference to the quantity. And I think it's a beautiful word. So there you go. Did I do it for you? I gave you quite a bit today. I gave you Shad, Kich, Li. I gave you Shad, Kanats, Kich, and Manats. Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you, Ken. Why did I bring all this up? Because, well, Lent. Shad, Kanats, Kich, and Manats. We are past the halfway point in Lent. In other words, much of it has gone by, and a little remains. A few days remain. Now, this is no judgment on is it better that much has gone by. It's just it's a matter of fact. Many of the days have gone by, and a few days remain. Less on that side. And we are at that hump portion of Lent. If you've been following the Lenten Journey podcast, you know we made a big deal about coming off of the mountain. You reach to the top, to the peak at the halfway point, and as you're coming back down, you see that the world is there, and you realize that your spirituality, this is the important part, which very few people get it, spirituality has to make sense in the real world. In other words, practical application of your faith is essential. That's what we're going to come back and talk about, practically applying that faith. Here is today's song of the day. Utordu içni anverç mi venuene ke samar takalini vochtetsyun alusher tam hamar amen mi patir mech khatatsni zhlat tmerne pretty voice. Lilit Pipoyan is the artist there. That is off of her album called Lia Lucin. Did you make the connection? Yes. And one day remind me to tell you the story of Lilit. That name too is beautiful too. I read this story back in seminary written by Avedikis Sahagyan called Lilit. One day I'll tell you. You got to promise me you'll remind me. It is a fantastic story. It is a beautiful story. Emotional, romantic, oh, charming. But for right now, that is Lilit Pipoyan. That is off of her album called Lia Lucin. Now, did we learn what that is? That is the full moon. And that particular song is called Tsuin Tsuin, Snow, Snow. And I thought, this is the last one, okay? We're already in spring, but I know some of you, it's lingering. I don't understand this weather. I mean, we're in 90-degree heat over here. right now in Southern California. And I know some of you are still in snow. So there it is. There's the last of the snow and beautiful voice to take us to that place too. Now, before we went to the break, we talked about the practical applications of faith. Well, that was how I ended it. But I want you to think about a few things today. And I'm very concerned about the way, if you remember the last couple weeks, we've been talking about this idea of fear coming out of Japan, people being scared, like what's going on over there. Okay, it's enough that we had the earthquake, we had the tsunami, now there's radiation fear. And the bigger things is the fear, people hoarding iodide pills and so on. Now, also on the wave of that fear is this idea of this apprehension and anxiety for tomorrow. And I think it's very important that we set the stage for it, because we're going to talk about it next week as we get closer to the Advent Sunday. This idea that somehow these are the signs of the times. I'm sure you could imagine, many of you could imagine, you can't imagine, I was going to say, how many people have been writing to me, how many people have been coming up to me and sharing their concerns about this, that we are somehow in the, these are the signs of the times. There's been earthquakes over in Japan, last year it was in Chile, and there's been earthquakes reported here and there, and now, of course, radiation coming out. And these are all signs of the times. And add to it, of course, what's going on in Libya, last month in Egypt, and what's going on in Syria, and of course, you're talking about Darfur over there. Well, that's just signs of the times. I think that's pretty selfish to believe that somehow all of these things have been orchestrated to show that this is the end time. Now, you can believe what you want, how the end is going to come, how the person is going to pull the plug on this thing. You know, you want to believe that all of a sudden you're going to look in the sky and see a picture of Jesus. He's going to be knocking on the United Nations. Whether you believe God's just going to say, okay, that's it, and just kind of blow it all out, or whatever it's going to be. You're free to believe whatever image you have in your mind. Now, what I want to share with you is really some concrete ways of dealing with that apprehension and that anxiety, because unfortunately, that fear that you're feeling is being passed on, you know, through Hollywood, through the media, and it's being passed on especially to the most precious of God's creation, which is children, who are growing up in this fear. In fact, I just recently heard a study that has been done. I mean, it was fascinating. It was coming out of the Middle East and talking about why are we faced with so many cases of autism, of attention deficit disorder among children. Why is it that all of a sudden it seems like we have so many more cases? And I don't know the exact numbers, but it was an interesting theory that this person had. He was basically saying that we are in an emotional and a spiritual overload, especially for children, who have to deal with these major, major issues like world situations. I mean, seeing their parents stressed, not only over their local environment, in other words, dealing with the finances, job loss, dealing with mortgages and payments and headaches of daily grind and working for employers that just don't appreciate you, and dealing with relationships, but also dealing with the world situation, with economies that are failing, with the world market the way it is, with earthquakes on the magnitude of Japan, of Chile last year, of revolution, of Egypt, of Libya, things happening in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran. And, you know, it's like overwhelming. I mean, just think about what happened in the last few weeks. And besides that, look at where globalization, look at where technology has brought us, so that everything comes to you at light speed. It literally is at light speed. It's traveling via electricity, electric current, right? And so immediately you're being tweeted about what's going on in Libya by somebody standing right there, having a bomb aimed at him. You're receiving this tweet from this person. Immediately you're seeing it on Facebook. Immediately you're seeing it on a web page. Immediately you're seeing it on your TV screen. And so there's this immediacy that you have to somehow deal with and process. And it gets overwhelming. It gets overwhelming, and especially for children. So that's what this theory was, that maybe some of these things about attention deficit, maybe some things about autism are because of the lifestyles that we're leading. And I apologize because I won't be able to put this, unless we could find it before we publish today. I apologize. I don't have the exact source of where I read that or where I heard that. I will definitely look into it and put it up subsequently later on, maybe on our website, but it won't be in today's. I don't think we'll be able. Maybe Susie, she's a miracle worker. If we can, we'll try to get it in today's show notes. But an interesting theory nonetheless, right? Sure. All of it pointing to that, yeah, we are in this information anxiety overload period of time. And yeah, it's all bombarding us. It's all hitting us from right and left. And yeah, you're going to get anxious. You're going to have fear. And yes, you might think that these are the signs of the times. And that's where it gets dangerous, because now you're talking about human terms, about being able to dissect all of these signs and putting meaning to all of these signs. Basically, the earth is shifting and you have these tectonic plates are finding their equilibrium point, and you are now interpreting that as some kind of a divine plan. That's getting dangerous, folks. Okay, you're talking about someone like a Gaddafi getting out there and just, you know, he's whacked out on something and he's telling people this and that. You're talking about governments, espionage. You're talking about governments going at each other one over one. And you're saying, well, this is God. Let's interpret it in God's way. No, you can't do that. In fact, Jesus warns us. He says, you're going to hear about these earthquakes. You're going to hear about it, and you're going to say these are the ends of time, but it's not. He says, nobody knows that time. And this is so important. If nobody knows, then don't worry about it. You see, because at the end of the day, you cannot argue with God. That's the whole thing that everybody misses. You know, you can't believe how many people come up to me and they ask me about 2012. Do you believe in 2012? Yeah, I believe in it. I believe in 2011. I believe in 2013, you know? Well, you know what we're talking about. And their whole perception, or the whole idea of 2012, has been colored, has been drawn out by Hollywood, right? Because these people are not people that have gone and studied Aztec literature. They've basically been told this is what... Remember like a few years ago when, what was it, the Da Vinci Code came out. And people became biblical scholars overnight because they went and saw Da Vinci Code. Or read the book. Same way. Now we're talking about 2012. What are you going to do with God? What are you going to do when you're sitting across from God and he's decided to pull the plug tomorrow? And say, hey, wait a minute, it's not 2012 yet?
I'm trying to think, but nothing happened.
What are you going to do at that point, you know? Or, you know, if it's 2025, you know? What are you going to do? Turn to him and say, oh, well, wait a minute, this was supposed to happen 13 years ago. You didn't keep your part of the bargain. No, folks, that is not our business. And that's why I'm going to go back to this quote that I said from Cesar Chavez. And I want this to really... to hit us today in a unique way. Yes, today is Cesar Chavez Day. And the reason I picked out this quote, it's so important because it's not talking about ourselves. So many times when we talk about end times, signs of the times, we're interpreting things on our terms rather than looking at the collective. What does Chavez say? He says, we cannot seek achievement for ourselves and forget about progress and prosperity for our community. Our ambitions must be broad enough to include the aspirations and needs of others, for their sakes and for our own. Okay, now put a little religious bend on this. How dare you sit and think about your own personal salvation? How dare you bring it down to those terms of a personal salvation when out there are people that are hurting? That people I can't imagine being in a place called heaven and knowing that the people that I care about, even one person that I care about, might be in a place called hell. It doesn't even make sense. What kind of heaven would it be without that person there? Right? Now, I'm saying all this because, of course, those of you who have followed along on Next Step know where I'm coming from. I don't believe in this idea, and I don't think that Jesus ever taught it. this idea that God is this personalized manifestation of a person in our terms, where you bring him a laundry list and he says, okay, I think I'll do this, 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 and this for you. Jesus talks about praying. He talks about, yes, he talks about meditation. Now, unfortunately, people have gotten this really out of hand, but think about this week. And I want to share this with you. This week was in the Armenian Orthodox faith, we have a unique name for every Sunday of Lent. This Sunday is called the Sunday of the Unjust Judge. Now, here is a judge who's not scared of anybody, but what he does is he goes ahead and he sees the case of this woman for no other reason except that she continually pursues him. She continually, without ceasing, goes and asks him, please, please, please see my case. Please give me justice. And this judge finally gets so worn out, he says, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go and see her case. And so he puts her on, you know, he sees her case and takes care of her. And the point of this story is not that if you keep praying, 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 God will see your, will answer your prayers to your liking. That is not the point. This, by the way, you could find it in Luke chapter 18. And unfortunately, people, this is what they come up with. Okay, see, the woman kept asking, asking. So if I keep asking, God will take care of me. No! That's not what this parable is about. And this is where you need the Armadoxy kind of flavor to it, to understand it in today's terms. It's very easy. In fact, the evangelist Luke points to the purpose of this parable. He says it straight out. He says, and Jesus spoke this parable so that they would never tire from praying. The entire purpose of the judge is to remind us that we need to be in constant prayer. And that prayer is not just a vertical prayer. In other words, a prayer straight up to God. It is a horizontal prayer with ourselves. Very, very, very important to remember. Because now we're talking about meditation. And that is a point that very few times you hear in the Armenian church, but is a key point to Armadoxy. In fact, the ascetics, in fact, when you look at somebody, one of the greats like Naregatsi, or you look at Shnorali, these are things that came out, their prayers, their songs, their praise came out of meditation. Because you see, Jesus tells us, he says, do not use empty words like the heathen do when you pray. In fact, when you pray, he gives us a way to pray. He says, our Father, you are in heaven. May your name be holy. Your kingdom come. May it come the way it is, what your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Right? That is the prayer. We call that the Our Father. Sometimes mistakenly people call it the Lord's Prayer. But it is the Our Father, Hayer Mer. And he says, as a qualifier, why we should pray this way, he says, your Heavenly Father already knows what your needs are. Wow. If God knows what my needs are, why am I praying then? Why don't I just shut up? Why don't I just sit there and look and wait? What if God knows everything that I need? Why don't I just like prepare the list and then just kind of like leave it up to him? Well, maybe you can do it that way. Maybe you get lucky too. Yes, that word lucky. And maybe it hits. But here's what Jesus means. In fact, it's so simple. You see, if God already knows what your needs are, what is the purpose of prayer? It's not merely a conversation with God. It's conversation with yourself. That's where meditation comes in. You need to take some time out from your busy schedule every single day, not only Lent, but all the time, to find some reflective time, to pray, to look inward, to meditate, so that you focus on your needs. Because ultimately, you're the one who is going to be in charge of your destiny. It's not all pre-written. You need to come to terms with what God has given you. That's what we learned through the prodigal son. That's what we learned through the steward the last few weeks, right? That we are in charge. We have to take responsibility for our lives. And now you get it. Now you start understanding that it's not about God creating this havoc, God creating these tsunamis and these earthquakes and radiation. It's people being able to rise to the occasion. To say that, you know, we are living in a world that has difficulties, but our only hope in the world is for me to do something about it, for me to stand up. And yet, yes, today in Japan, there are people that are suffering. How can I help them? Well, at the very least, write out a check. At the very least, write them a letter. Send them an email. Send somebody, answer a tweet that's coming out of there and let the people know that we are here. We are supporting you. Yes, you hear about Darfur. At the very least, send a check in and say that, okay, I want to support this fast for Darfur. At the very least, send out a small little email. Send out a small tweet. Let people know that you care for them, right? It's pushing yourselves to your humanness. Finding the God within you to make those changes around you. That's an important one. You see, God's arms are your arms. God's feet are your feet. God's mouth is your mouth. You need to be able to be out there. That's what Christian responsibility calls us to. It's not a question of God, hey, here, you know, he's our Superman. Here's our list. Take care of it. And then call me in the morning. Superman could do that, right? God is bigger than Superman. Yes, that's right. Superman can do it. Oh, I see it in the films. He does it. God's even bigger, though. What God can do is place the love in your heart. Place that passion in your heart. Place in your heart that idea that you have faith in tomorrow. You have faith in humanity. You have faith in yourself. You believe that together, by extending a hand to your brother, to your sister, you are able to take on the challenges that are in front of you. You can do it. You need to be able to push yourself to that point. We got Ani with her bubbles right now, and this is the week of the judge. We'll come back with some more thoughts. Here's today's Spiritual Bubbles.
Today's Spiritual Bubble focuses on the Lenten season. During Lent, it's a good time to clean out the clutter in our lives. That means disposing of useless papers, unused stuff, but also throwing out old grudges. The prevalence and durability of grudges proves Maya Angelou's observation that people don't always remember what you said or did, but they do remember and will always remember how you made them feel. Grudges are nothing more than toxic memories of how someone made us feel. But Confucius taught that to be wronged is nothing unless we continue to remember it. So why do so many of us choose to consciously preserve and revisit toxic feelings that detract us from our happiness? Perhaps we fool ourselves into thinking we can inflict some sort of pain on the person who wronged us. In fact, holding on to a grudge is like holding on to a hot stone. It doesn't hurt the stone or the person who gave it to us. It only hurts the one holding on to it. Carrying a grudge is like being stung to death by one bee. It doesn't matter how justified the bitter feelings are or how right we are. Holding on to a grievance turns pain into suffering. In a peculiar way, it empowers the wrongdoer to hurt us again and again. So this Lent, give yourself a great gift. Muster the good sense and strength to root out and release deep-seated and long-held resentments. If you can, forgive and forget. But all that's really necessary is a firm decision to let go of your grudges so you can move forward and free yourself from the chains of resentment. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Beautiful. You know, you cannot imagine how many people I get. It's pretty wild how many people come to me during the Lenten season and ask me about dietary restrictions Is it okay for me to eat this or that? The other day somebody asked, is it okay if we eat on Saturday and Sunday? Is it okay if we have some milk? And what about this or that? Is fish okay? You know, the Catholics say that fish is okay. Okay, now folks, here's the rule in the Armenian Church. Give up meat. Give up all animal products. Anything that comes from animals. That's it. Okay, it's pretty basic. Now, you want to do it some other way, it's your business. There's nobody. There's no Lenten police. Nobody's going to check you out. You're not going to go to hell if you break it. These are here, these dietary restrictions are here, to remind us of a simpler life. It's the call to Lent, to go back to a simpler life. People get so hung up on these trivial things, probably because they are the easy ones. What Ani just talked about, giving up grudges. Now, that's the hard one. And that's what really the call to Lent is all about. Perfect, Ani. Yes, you hit it. Give up a grudge. Try to make amends with somebody. Remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, if you go to the altar of God and you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar of God and go and make amends with him. Well, what's Jesus saying? He's saying there's something more important than God. Yes, that's it. Right? He's saying, leave your gifts at the altar and go. Something's more important. Well, what is more important? It's our relationship with one another. Because that defines how we look at God. That defines how we understand God. As the evangelist tells us, God is love. Well, what is that supposed to mean? That expression of love is what we feel towards one another. How we help, how we extend ourselves to one another. It's not just this pie in the sky idea. And that's how we began this podcast, right? I told you we've got to take some practical applications to our faith. Because it's all around us. People are all around us talking about this spirituality as if they get it and nobody else does. Hey, none of us get it. It's all equal for all of us. We are all trying the best we can. We are not God. We are far from God, but we try to interpret reality the best we can. And when I talk about armodoxy, I'm telling you this is something that is a real thinking person's faith. It is not just being thrown at you. It is a life call to responsible action. Action for others. A faith that is very real. That has kept a group of people alive despite not having any of the modern conveniences of military warfare, military army strategies, kept the people alive. Why? Because that faith is more important. It is really the weapon of choice. Think about that. It is the weapon of choice. And that weapon, unfortunately, we're not tapping into. Now, last week we went to this fascinating conference. It was over at Loyola Marymount University, and it was put on by the Huffington Ecumenical Symposium. And it's called War and Peace, an Orthodox Catholic Conversation. And as the name implies, there were speakers from both the Catholic, basically the Western Christianity, and the Orthodox community, the Eastern community, East and West coming together and talking about war and peace. A lot of discussion about just war, about how the saints perceived it, looked at Ambrose, at Augustine, and it was very fascinating. But at some point, it has to leave academia, right? And it has to move over to the practical, exactly what we've been talking about today. And at what point does that faith become real? What point does that faith have applications so that people are changed, people are being touched, so that the world is being changed, so that you are being changed, so that you are being transformed? Let me share a couple things from that conference. It was very interesting for me. This is from the Western side, let's say, okay? But listen, this is from the Pontifical Council of Justice and Peace. It's a compendium of social doctrine of the Church. States still have the obligation to do everything possible to ensure that the conditions of peace exist, not only within their own territory, but throughout the world. It is important to remember that it is one thing to wage a war of self-defense. It is quite another to seek to impose domination on another nation. The possession of war potential does not justify the use of force for political or military objectives. Interesting, because we're looking now at a very real situation that has just come about, right? Libya. And you've got someone like Gaddafi. And you've got him basically harming people. At what point do you intervene? At what point do you say that I am the police? At what point do you use weapons of destruction instead of using the weapon of compassion, the weapon of understanding? Is it too pie in the sky? Is it really unrealistic? These are the questions that come up, and you need to be able to answer these questions if you're going to have, if you're going to be living in today's society and really have an answer, basically, to the ultimate question of why fight, why kill, when you can live. And I just read to you a little statement from the West, from the Catholic, let's say, camp. Here is from the Eastern. This is His All Holiness Bartholomew I, who is the ecumenical patriarch. The irrationality of war is evident from its effect on humanity and on the natural environment. It is our duty to intervene whenever possible, to persuade those who are responsible for making decisions in order that they might seek peaceful resolutions to human problems. Interesting, because we're not talking, on the Eastern side, we're not talking about intervening and justifying the war. We're talking about intervening and justifying peace. It's a small little difference there. But we always talk about justifiable war. At what time do you start talking about justifiable peace? That really, peace is the natural is the natural order. I mean, think about it. From the time of creation, whether you want to believe in a God that creates a Big Bang or anything, what is the world doing? It is trying to seek and find its equilibrium point, right? You've got the cooling down of molecules through the billions of years. You've got planets coming and finding order and spinning and going around the centers of galaxies of the universe. Well, what are they doing? They're seeking their natural order. They're seeking peace. You see this in nature. I mean, basically, we look at the aftermath of an earthquake. But what is an earthquake? It's nature finding its equilibrium. It's those plates settling, finding a place where they could be comfortable. And nobody told those plates that there's, you know, thousands and millions of people living up above you. Those plates are just doing what comes natural. They seek their equilibrium. And so too, the equilibrium is the peaceful solution, is what peace is all about in this world. Politically, that's what we try to seek. And how can you possibly seek that through weapons, through destruction? This is the myth that we've been sold, that somehow, if you want peace, you have to be mightier than the other person. And we've been sold this. I'm not talking about conspiracy theory. I mean, we've been sold this from day one. When you go out on your schoolyard and the bullies keep picking on you, right? And the bullies are after you. What do you do at that point? Well, you can't really sit down and say, hey, let's negotiate something. Or maybe you can. But in that bully, you also see somebody who has lost love. You've lost the understanding of compassion. And unfortunately, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to sit down and discuss with a bully. It's a lot easier to make a fist and punch him out. It's much easier to flatten him out. He gets the point right away. But the aftermath of that is something that you and I have to be able to discuss. That if it's not a punch, it might be a gun. If it's not a gun, it's a bomb. If it's not a bomb, it's a nuclear annihilation. Are we ready to let it escalate to that point? You see, all wars begin on very simple terms. People not understanding and finding it impossible to communicate. And so they need to go into this war mode. I think that as people, as creations of God, we've got to look to a higher, something higher than that. Basically, that we are all on the same planet. And all wars in the eyes of God are civil wars. In other words, that we're all brothers and sisters in this planet. One of the speakers last week at this conference made the point that all killing is fratricide. And he pointed to the story of Cain and Abel. But it's interesting too, because if you believe that we are all brothers and sisters in this world, yes, all killing is fratricide. The killing of brothers. We're killing ourselves. We're killing our family. We need to look for different solutions. And those solutions are difficult. I'm not pretending that it's just easy. But it has to start someplace. And this is, I think, the call to the revolution. If you really want the revolution to happen, it has to begin with us. It's not going to happen up at the top. They could care less. They could care less, because it's easier just to annihilate a group of people than it is to sit down and negotiate, to talk. It's easier to spy. It's easier to kill. It's easier to maim and then deal with the aftermath. That's the theory of war. The difficult one is to sit down and find, what is bothering you? Is there something that we could talk about, we could discuss? And yes, ultimately, you may get to a point of a stalemate. And then you have to make some other decisions. But what we're finding more and more in the world, we're not waiting for that point, right? It's just faster to resolve it. And think about this, and this is what I want to leave you with. I talked about how it goes up, right? Us doing that, and then it hits our world image. Think about now what we have. We have the world image being presented like this. And so what are our children learning? They are learning that this is how you resolve problems. The person who has the bigger gun, the bigger weapon, he's the winner. And that's something I don't want our children to learn. That's something that Christ came to really to do away with. To realize that we are all on this boat together. We are all children of God, and we've got to work together to bring about this peace. Well, before we finish today, I want to share with you some thoughts that are coming right out of the genocide zone. It's coming right out of Chad, the refugee camps over in the refugees of the Darfuri genocide. And this is our friend Gabriel Starring, and as you know, we've been following him. Please do check out all of his posts. Just go to In His Shoes, and we'll point you there. Definitely in today's show notes, we'll have some links that you can follow along. But here is Gabriel writing out of there, and this all points, of course, to the upcoming fast that we're going to be doing for Darfur, because we're going to be really collecting money to continue this kind of work, getting the word out. Let me read what he said, and then we'll come back to that in a minute, okay? This is right from his writings. It says, "Can you hear me now? Back home, I'm connected at all times." Now, I should say, let me preface this. He says, this is Gabriel writing from Darfuri refugee camps. This is in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of these deserts, hot heat, you know, scorching them. Small little homes, small little tents that have become home to these refugees for the last 6-7 years, since their villages, since their homes have been desecrated, raped, pillaged. And so he goes there, and Gabriel goes there, and he takes some generators, he takes some equipment, and gets the word out. This is what he writes. "Back home, I'm connected at all times. My BlackBerry is attached to my hand. I don't think I could fall out, even if I tried to drop it. My Mac is control central for all my activities and communications. Emails, blogs, tweets, Facebook posts, and many more forms of reaching out and listening in are almost nonstop. On a regular basis, I connect through video chat with my team, always at night since they all have their regular jobs. I'm always connected. I'm still pretty amazed at being able to connect for a live streaming video feed in pretty good quality all the way from Eastern Chad, where there is no infrastructure and definitely no Wi-Fi. We do this with a few things we carry in one backpack. Today, we facilitated what was called a live school assembly from Camp Gozamir. Students and teachers from this refugee camp gathered to answer questions from people, many of them students from the United States and other parts of the world. It was streaming live through the internet, and people could send in their questions real time. As our friend from UMDA, or camp leader, said, "This is the first time we connect with the outside world like this." The violence the refugees experienced and which forced them from their homes occurred without anyone watching or listening. They walked across the desert, many of them dying along the way, without anyone watching or listening. They have now been living here for about 8 years, and they feel disconnected from the world and from having influence about major issues related to their home, Darfur, and their lives. Blackberries and Macs won't change this for our friends here. There has to be real and sincere listening on the other side. After listening, there has to be immediate action. And he pieces out Gabriel. This is the group that we're going to be supporting through our Fast for Darfur this year. It is so essential that this word and this message get out. What Gabriel describes here is a journey that I, as an Armenian, feel real up close and personal. He's describing the story that happened to my grandparents. Violence from refugees. These were the refugees. My grandparents were refugees right out of their own homeland. It was their ancestral homeland that they were living in. And they were forced out into the deserts to go and march. Many of them died. My grandmother had to dig a ditch to put my uncle in there. My father's brother had to be dug into a ditch because he died of malaria on the road. And at the refugee camps, they all get together and they try to make some sense of what we call life. It's far from life. Now, how do you get that message out? We have the tools, we have the means. And I'm counting on you right now to be part of a solution. What we talked about throughout this entire podcast of making a difference, of taking that faith that you have in your heart and applying it to real life, applying it and making an application out of it, making it the app so that you press the button and you know that something's happening. I need money right now. We're going to be supporting this project specifically in Darfur. My goal is $25,000. I would love to see $50,000. That's what we're shooting for. We're going to be getting out there with emails, with mails. Please be generous in your giving. This is an opportunity for you to make a difference, to get the word out. I'm not asking for money for guns, for weapons. We're not interested in building bombs. All we're interested in is getting the word out. This is the purest form of people coming together and helping, extending themselves. We're going to be supporting this project that is going right on in the refugee camps. In the past, our small group of In His Shoes has raised over $500,000 to aid refugees in camps just like this with food. This time we're going to be doing something a little bit different by educating the masses, getting the word out. I need your support on this. Please be generous. You can click on the In His Shoes site or at epostle.net on the donate button, or else you can send in a donation. Just earmark it for Fast for Darfur. And you can send it to the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stocker Street in Glendale, California. That's in the United States of America, 91202. And I'll tell you, every cent that you send in is going to be used to combat this evil, which has been going on since the beginning of time. It's not a question of the signs of the times. It's a question of us being the signs of the solution. With God's love, God's help in our heart, projecting that out to the world. You with me? I hope you are. We are at the end of today's podcast. There is so much I'd like to share with you, but we continue throughout the week with our other podcasts that are going on daily. We've got blogs. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Join us somewhere. Hey, if you're in Glendale, join us in person. Wow, I gotta keep saying that. That's an important one, too. Always love to see our listeners. Listen, for the wonderful team who puts this together, I want to just invite you to join us at inhisshoes.org. That's the mothership. Or join us at thevoiceofinhisshoes.org, which is epostle.net. Check out today's show notes for all of the links that are necessary to tie you in with what we're doing. For the wonderful team who puts this together, for Susie, our producer, for Ani with her bubbles, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week, when we will take the next step. And listen carefully to what this person says. It's kind of interesting.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.